with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. Hello, I'm Marnie Roper. Many of our listeners are vision impaired and rely on a variety of aids to help them get around, both indoors and outdoors, such as white canes, guide dogs, and GPS navigation tools. The simple technology of the traditional white cane is constantly being upgraded, with new and advanced approaches. In a recent AbleQuest program, we explored the development of the white cane from its beginning as a simple stick painted white to contemporary versions which include sophisticated GPS navigation technology. In today's program, we look at a complex project being undertaken by the Department of Electrical and Computing Engineering at Curtin University in Perth, under the leadership of Dr. Ian Murray. This project is dependent on the dedication and research of six PhD students who are working as a team on what they call the Indoor Navigation Project. Dr. Murray says the white cane has been a successful innovation for decades, and by using special multi-sensor array technology, the Indoor Navigation Project will enable people who are blind to sense their surroundings beyond the cane's tip. While many indoor locations already have a special map that people who are blind can use to find their way around, they don't allow for change and can therefore be quite dangerous. For instance, a conference room is forever changing. Sometimes the chairs can be set up differently. The Indoor Navigation Project is developing a map system that can adjust for these movements. To find out more, Barbara Sullivan spoke with the project leader, Dr. Ian Murray.
Hello, Ian. Welcome to AbleQuest.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, before we talk about the actual technology, Marnie and I are curious about one thing. How did you come up with the idea of having six PhD students doing different study each, but working together in unison to create a single practical solution?
Probably the easiest answer to that is slowly. It's a complex, very large project, which is far too much for any one person to look at. So we've basically looked at the overall problem and broken it up into solvable chunks. There's more than six areas. We're always looking for more students to work on it, but we have the six at the moment.
Tell us then about the general concept of the Indoor Navigation Project.
Well, basically, what we've noticed is that there's a lot of training involved getting people with low vision or blindness familiar with new environment. And another development that has recently come about is the very inexpensive sensors, which are basically getting into everything. Inside your mobile phone, for example, there's almost always a three-axis accelerometer, quite often a gyro, there's barometers, ambient light sensors, and these gather information about your environment. So what we thought is, if we can use devices such as this to gather information about the environment a person is in, we should be able to build a description of that environment to feed back to the user. So really it's a combination of looking at the difficulties people have learning new environments and the amount of information we can pick up with these very, very inexpensive sensors that are now available.
And then combining these and giving feedback to the user.
That's right. So we take all this information we're gathering and we try and process it so that it builds a map. Not a map as a sighted person would envisage a map, but a map that is more suited to communicate to a person without vision.
Is your department undertaking this as an independent project, or are you working with other parties outside the university?
We're working closely with the Guide Dogs WA and Association for the Blind in Western Australia, mostly for their expertise in orientation mobility, and also the fact that we can get lots of people to test each component that we create.
Talking of the components, you said at the moment there are six components with the six students working on separate research projects. I'd like to talk specifically about each of those.
Sure.
So let's start with direction and distance and the stairs and inclines. How does that work?
Okay, we have a device called an IMU, an inertial measurement unit. This device, it's what's used in guided missiles and all kinds of interesting devices, but it measures how much a person is moving. Our research has developed a system where we can have a single sensor that the person puts in their pocket that will measure their steps, the kind of steps they're taking, the length of the step that they're taking, And from that, we can decide whether they're walking upstairs, downstairs, standing in a lift, moving on an escalator, walking slowly, walking quickly, etc. So we measure distance from that and also the style of terrain. In that sensor, it also contains a magnometer, which is basically a compass, and we can tell direction from there. So we get heading and distance and terrain type from the IMU.
And all you need is a pocket to put it in.
And all you need is a pocket and, of course, the phone to give you the information back again.
Now looking at the stereoscopic cameras, what's their function?
The function of that is to get some form of depth perception. So we're using this to actually identify obstacles and pathways. Because we're not building a map as in a normal map, we're really only interested in obstacles that can't be moved, such as a wall, obstacles that can be moved, such as a chair or a person,
mm-hmm.
and a path. And that's all we're really looking for. So the camera system is used to find these objects, edges of doorways and those sort of things.
So you've talked about static objects, but what about finding moving objects?
Moving objects generally would only be a person, because we're dealing indoor. We're not looking at outdoor where there's vehicles.
Right.
Vehicles move too quickly for us to really cope with very well at the moment. But they would be picked up as a person. And picking up a person is actually a solved problem. It's not that difficult to do.
Except that sometimes people make sudden moves without realising, don't they?
They do.
Turn around and walk the other way because they've forgotten something.
Yes, and being alerted that there is a person in the vicinity will allow the user to slow down, take more cautious steps.
Right.
And we will, of course, have an alarm system that if someone's about to step out in front of you, you will get an immediate alert.
Ah, and that's loud enough for the person to hear?
That one can actually use vibration.
Oh, right.
So we have multiple feedback methods that we're using, which we can discuss in a sec, if you like.
Well, the sensor data communicated across the networks to the user, how does that actually work?
Right. Well, there's several levels of communication. The system we're making is a sensor array. So there's multiple sensors sitting on a small board, which be a bit like a name badge. You know, you clip it to a pocket or somewhere where it's got a reasonable view, because we need the cameras to be able to see where you're going.
And again, we need the pocket.
And then you have one in your pocket, and that's used for the leg measurement, so we can tell how far you're going. And that communicates with your phone. So that will be either a radio or Bluetooth communication to your phone, something like a wireless headset. But all the processing is done on our sensor array. And we use the phone only to communicate to the user and also to communicate to our map database. So one of the ideas is we store the maps in the cloud once we've built, and when a new user comes in, they don't have to discover all the environment again. They will get that map downloaded, and they will then be able to update it as they move through the building as well.
Is there a way of ensuring reliability so that they're not ending up in dangerous situations?
This is exactly why we are not proposing to remove the white cane or guide dog, because computer technology is fallible, and human judgment is always far better than a computer. Even dog judgment is better than a computer. So we don't intend to make this, we can't make this foolproof. So we're going to rely on the normal practices with orientation and mobility, and this assists, extends the ability of the user. It is not to solve the problem completely.
And then all of this, all of what you've described, is pulled together and pooled into one gadget, the gadget that you've talked about.
Yes, and that is communicated just through a normal smartphone. Everyone's got smartphones now.
How difficult is it for somebody to learn how to use it?
Well, that's the reason we're working with the Association for the Blind in Perth so closely. It's going to communicate in exactly the same manner, or very close to the same manner, as your orientation and mobility instructor would teach you to move around an environment. So it should be something the user is very familiar with to begin with.
Yes. We understand that from your research you have developed several smaller devices, for example, a system for training in correct white cane usage. Can you tell us about those mini projects, if you like?
Well, the white cane one was one that came about when we were looking at what sort of information we can pick up and how the white cane is used and how we can augment the white cane in navigation. And we found out that most people aren't using the white cane correctly to its optimum level. And it's because you develop habits. Now, if we can develop something that looks at correct usage, the cane's upright, it's in the centre of the body, it's swinging to the correct width, it's in timing with your steps, it would assist in the initial training, but also as a refresher for people who are out using the cane every day. So basically, what we have is a sensor that goes in the pocket, same as the one we're using for the indoor navigation. Another one, very, very light, it's only probably 25, 30 grams, that attaches to the white cane. And we then communicate the timing information, distance walked, where you're tapping your cane, back to the phone, and that can then suggest you're rolling the cane or perhaps you're out of time on your steps and that sort of thing.
So how close are these to any of these systems to actually being available in the market, to commercialisation?
Well, we'd hope to get the white cane training system out towards the end of this year, beginning of next year. Some of the mapping and the descriptive information will be available fairly soon as well. But the overall system is very much a long-term project. It's very involved, and we probably wouldn't be looking at anything commercial in the next 2 or 3 years. It may take longer than that, I think.
How do you get these projects out? Are you funded by outside parties?
Generally, no. No.
Are you looking for funding?
Always looking for funding. No. It's very hard to keep and attract students if you can't offer them scholarships. Our material costs are reasonably low. This equipment is and the new technologies are very, very cheap compared to what they used to be. But it's mostly the staffing. In any assistive technology development, most of your costs are in the research and development, and that's where we use students. It reduces the cost, but it doesn't remove it altogether.
On the subject of the students, you mentioned before that it takes a while to pull six of these together, and so things happen quite slowly. Have you encountered any issues, any problems with the crossover in the research areas?
No, I'm not quite sure what you mean exactly, but getting students into the work is actually relatively easy because it has application in other more commercial areas. For example, building maps from the environmental conditions is very important for people like firefighters. If you're in a smoky building, a darkened building,
yes,
being able to move through the corridors where you don't have maps. So it has application in this area. And you're dealing with embedded systems and sensors, which again is the same place these students, when they graduate, will work. It's just something that's a nice application area.
I guess what I was meaning there was a PhD thesis is a very focused piece of work, and there may well be areas where it crosses over and the same work is being done across two separate theses.
In that case, we collaborate with the people that are developing different systems. In fact, we've got some contacts with people at the University of New South Wales. You attend conferences and share your information. So we really want people to be working on this. We want other people to look at it. We want input from other people. We want them to share our work. But the PhD thesis itself is, as you said, very focused. So it's unlikely that anyone is going to be doing exactly the same thing.
When you commercialise this, who would own the IP?
We try to put everything out under an open source, so we don't want people to own the IP. If people try to claim the IP, it usually pushes the price up.
Yes.
And the people we're trying to develop this for are generally not terribly well off financially, so we will try to keep the cost to an absolute minimum. You could commercialise a device and own the IP of that commercial device, but not the underlying technology. That would be open to anyone.
Well, it's extremely interesting. Ian, appreciate your time today. We would like to stay in touch and talk to you several months down the track about your progress.
Well, please do. I'd be happy to tell you about it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us from Western Australia.
You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening and goodbye till next programme.